Okay, so we had started to lay out the question of what exactly is the concept of hezekiah, and we have to use a word like concept because we don't even know how to categorize it as an iser or as a actual hezek or as something else. There's so much mystery about what even is the proper category for it, so we can't even use that sentence. But okay, we had framed the basic machlokas that either hezekriya shmei hezek or lav shmei hezek, meaning that either it is a hezek, not in the full sense of the word, because that a full sense of the word would mean a chi of tashlumin and an iser, and here we don't know about either part. It seems on the surface like we don't have a chi of tashlumin, and even the iser aspect is there, but more kind of parallel. And to say, therefore, that it means it's a thing, it's a concept, that there's something real happening, okay, that's acceptable. But then what does it mean to say lav shmei hezek? So lav shmei hezek, would that mean that it's not a thing, that it doesn't have any consequence, that it's not of any significance? That's hard to believe. So the understanding we were working with is that it means that yes, it's real, but the question is whose responsibility is it? Whose problem is it? So is it the problem of the one seeing, or is it the problem of the one being seen? And perhaps in a public sphere, the responsibility is on the one being seen. And that's where we come to that possible formulation of lav shmei hezek. However, the conclusion seems to be that shmei hezek, with a lot of details, and we saw that there are a lot of exceptions that even the position that says lav shmei hezek would acknowledge that there are many, many circumstances where that's not true and where there would be responsibility on the seer as well. So, with that, the question of trying to appreciate and understand what exactly is the nature of what's happening. So we started to say last time that there are at least two, probably three ways to look at it, and it doesn't have to be one or the other. It could be there are a combination of different elements, and it depends on the circumstances, and that may also explain different dinim. But we have to at least identify what these components are. So the first one that we had started to lay out in our previous effort was that by looking at somebody when they don't want to be seen, there is a psychic pain that's being inflicted upon them. There is an oppression that it hurts someone to be spied on, to be seen. Maybe spying is even too strong of a word, but to be seen when they don't want to be seen. And this is an issue that society is dealing with now in levels that are beyond anything spoken about in the past. But that's certainly an aspect of it. And if that's the case, so perhaps what we're talking about here is that it's not right to be looking at people in those circumstances. And I pose the question to you, if we're saying that's what we're talking about, so what's the Torah source that it's a problem to look at somebody when they don't want to be seen? So there are a couple of possibilities. We'll explore some more of them as we go on. But one possibility that we mentioned was that it's onas dvarim. The Torah in Parshas Bahar says lo sonu, that one should not afflict someone else and cause them emotional pain. The pasuk lo sonu appears twice in Parshas Bahar, one to refer to financial oppression and affliction by overcharging or underpaying, but also onas dvarim, to cause somebody emotional discomfort and emotional anguish, is a Torah prohibition. And the tshuvas Karen LeDavid, Siman Yud-Ches, that's a tshuva that was written in the past century. The Karen LeDavid died in 1927. Is really the main source that explains the concept of Gezel Shena that we sometimes talk about, that you are prohibited from disturbing someone's sleep. So he explains this is an example of losonu. You say you cause somebody problems, doesn't just mean that you offend them, that you insult them. That's the example the Gemara gives. The Gemara gives many examples of anas devarim, that you say something that hurts someone's feelings. But we find there are a lot of other examples also. So if you cause somebody emotional distress because you look at them in a nasty way, that's how the Sefer Yireim understands. Or you wake them up when they're allowed to be sleeping. So as the Karen of David notes, so that's onah. So presumably to be infringing on somebody's privacy is a violation no less or more than all of those examples, and would seem to be included in onas dvar. In addition, I think we also started to mention that we have the very well-known mitzvah of Yahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, which we often understand as do to others as you would want done to you. But some of the Rishonim raised the question that that's a pretty impossible standard, because you cannot actively do as much for everyone else as you would do for yourself. You just don't have those kind of resources. So what does kamocha mean? So there are many who understand that it's actually a negative. It's actually a prohibition. That basically it means that because it's an impossible standard to say you should do actively things for people that you want done for you, but we can try to do the negative, meaning that we can avoid doing things to others that we would not want them to do to us. So that is sometimes a rule of thumb for how you figure out what kinds of behaviors are inappropriate when they're not otherwise explicitly prohibited. But they are the kind of thing that the average person would not want done to them. So that creates a prohibition towards others. So we have to l'arecha kamocha then manifests itself as an isser. Do not act towards others in a way that you would not want to have done to you. And in fact, there are some who suggest that that's the source for the isser nezikin. Now, we mentioned a while ago that there is not a clear source in the Torah telling us that we're not allowed to damage people's property. We assume that there is such a source, but it's hard to point to one. So there are a number of theories, and one of them is that you have to l'recha kamocha, that just like you don't want someone breaking your stuff, even if they pay you for it, you still would not somebody wanting you would not want somebody breaking your window and then writing you a check. You'd rather not have it broken in the first place. So even separate from the monetary component, there is this aspect of Yahav Tarecha Kamocha. So too, when it comes to the Issa Nezikin, that's the idea. So this would certainly be in that category. Right? Most people want their privacy. Most people would not want to be looked at when that's not the right time. So too, that creates an Issa from the perspective of Yahav Tarecha Kamocha. Okay, so far so good. That makes sense. Okay, we'll see in a minute or two that there are a few other possibilities as well, but those are some initial ways of understanding it. So it could be that we're talking here about an isser not to impose this kind of psychic harm on someone. Or it could be that it's something more basic. Can you think of any other categories here? What else might be going on? Besides this notion of causing emotional suffering, right, is there any other aspect? Yes, Max?
I think we saw something related to Hezekiah and their Sinai, that like when you look at them, that could cause them to do certain things that they would otherwise not do that would ultimately damage their own, like, own property. Like they might neglect their own field if they feel uncomfortable going out there, and that would be the Hezekiah. Is it like Hezek, and that kind of damage would be the Hezek?
Okay. So, yes, you're on the right track there for sure. That it could be that what we're talking about is the fact that my looking at you has an impact on what you do. Right? And that sometimes is good and sometimes is helpful for society. That itself, you know, is an interesting philosophical question. Because Plato wrote about this, about the concept of the Gyges ring, that if somebody had a ring that would give him invisibility, so people would not be able to see him, would there be any guarantee of morality? How much do we have to rely on the fact that people are embarrassed to be seen doing the wrong thing to keep them on the straight and narrow? So it's true, sometimes it's a good thing that people are inhibited by the fact that they can be seen by others. But sometimes it's reasonable for them to want to be able to have some privacy in order to function, whether it's just matters of personal use or maybe it's business aspects, which still require a certain amount of discretion. And if I'm going to be exposed to those around me, so I'm going to be inhibited in what I can do. And if I am inhibited, so then I have less value out of my property. If the space in which I can use my property the way I want to use it is constricted, so now I have a reduction in monetary value. And you could look at that itself two ways. You could say just that I have property that is less valuable to me. Or you could say that I may actually make less money because I can't carry out business the way that I want to. If I have to do all of my business activities in the out and open, so then there's going to be restrictions on what I'm able to accomplish. And therefore, I may be taking a loss from that perspective. So that's another very concrete way of understanding what the issue is when it comes to hezekria, that simply I do not have full functionality if I don't have some degree of privacy. And therefore, in order to preserve the dollar value here of my functionality, I have a right to say there's a limit to how much you can allow yourself visual access to me. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, so you see those elements among Rishonim. Again, it's striking that on our daf, there's so much that's not really defined. Right? Between our daf and Nintes and Samach, which we'll mention in a moment also, that those are really the core Hezekriya sugyas. And the Gemara is kind of taking it for granted that you know what Hezekriya is. And the Rishonim, for the most part, aren't helping that much, right? Are not defining the term that much. But these two aspects essentially are emerging from the context and from some of the statements. And we'll see how that plays out. And before expanding on that a little bit more, so we'll note that there is possibly a third angle. And that's really what comes out from the Gemara in Cheska Sabbatim, the Gemara on Daf Dantes and Daf Samach, which talks about windows and doorways. Is there an additional aspect that you can point to from those Gemaras that emerges? Did you note anything else? This is actually an increasingly important aspect as far as trying to figure out some of the cultural elements. That there, the Gemara makes reference to Bilam, right? So what's the major lesson from Bilam? So B'chlal, it's surprising that we start our day every day quoting from Bilam, Matovo Alech Yaakov. It's already an interesting choice to make him our Rebbe in the beginning of Tefillah. And the Maharshal actually had a tshuva that he didn't say Matovu every day because of that. But the impact of Matovu, according to the Gemara in Cheskas Abatim, is what made him say this? The Matovu Alecha Yaakov, that your tents are so really Levi, are you raising your hand?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I would say the fact that he's praising it shows that it's out of the ordinary. So
what is it? It's praising what?
That people are machped not to, or at least the Klal Yisrael was machped not to look into each other's tent. So,
oh, okay. So that's the missing part.
And if it's something that's praiseworthy, that means it's not the norm. So maybe it's not considered to be maybe it wasn't considered substantive damage.
Well, that's an interesting. That's a very interesting. That's a very complicated approach to take. But just on the surface, the fact that he is saying that the Jews are impressive and praiseworthy because of their tznius, essentially. And he's saying that he saw them shochem l'shvatav. He saw that they were placed in such a way that they didn't have their doors facing each other, that their housing set up. Here we're not talking about their dress. That's important also, but separate from the way they were dressed, that their housing arrangements were such in the camp that they were not exposed to each other. And that type of a private arrangement of a setup that allows for some degree of confidentiality and modesty and discretion is something that was very praiseworthy and apparently also connected to why the Shekhinah is present among the Jewish people. So what emerges from that Gemara in the context of Hezekiah is really a third element, which is distinct from the first two, in that it sees avoiding Hezekiah as a moral value, meaning that it is right to protect your privacy. Not that you have a right to your privacy, but that it is right to protect your privacy, that you should protect your privacy. So the first two cases and the first two models, and there's room to distinguish between them, but one common element between the first two models is that what if you have somebody who doesn't care? So listen, I got nothing to hide. And personally, I don't really care what anyone else thinks. And I'm happy to be open to the world. So how would that affect the Hezekiah dynamic? So it could be that within the first two models, that might have a big impact. And to a certain extent, it probably does. But what is clear from this citation of Bilam and this reference in Cheskes Abatim is that it's not totally up to you. It's not totally up to you to decide that you want to be open to the world, that to have a degree of discretion and privacy is proper and right. And that's why the Jews are praised. And every day we start off quoting somebody who you would really think would not be our role model. And we say, Ma tovu halach Yaakov. And according to the Gemara, what's so good about the Ohalim, what's so good about them is that they protect against Hezekiah. And that's our opening message every day. So that's a pretty powerful statement. Right? So that adds a whole other aspect, that there is this notion of a moral value of privacy connected to Hezekiah, so that Chazal are telling us that it's not just something every individual is entitled to, but it's something that our society should have. It's something that our culture should want, whether or not the individuals involved properly appreciate that. So far, so good? Okay, so it's also noteworthy that the Ramban over there, the Ramban on the test, if you had a chance to see, it was on the Makoris originally, that the Ramban adds what seems to be, in this context, he adds some additional elements. You recall what the Ramban says over there? It's a little hard to interpret exactly what he means, but he throws in a few extra concepts. So he throws in the idea of Ayin Hara, which is itself a mysterious idea that needs to be defined in its own terms. But he also talks about Lishna Bisha. And so what is Lishna Bisha? That's Aramaic for Lashon Hara. So how does Lashon Hara get involved here? Who's talking about anybody else? Why is Lashon Hara invoked in the context of Hezekiah? Any theories how to explain that? What does Lashon Hara got to do with anything? No one's saying anything as far as we know. So it's not necessarily obvious, but what I would assume the Ramban is trying to say is that there's a overlap between the issue of Lashon Hara overall and the general concern of people being in each other's business, the notion of gossiping, of talking about what's going on with people, and being too curious and being too involved is itself a problem. Whether it's the problem or it's what leads to the problem, it's connected to greater societal issues. But it seems to be that by invoking the term generally in this context, saying that if you're going to be exposed, there's going to be issues of Lashon Hara, it's saying they're all one general consideration. It's saying that there is an issue of what happens when people are looking at what everyone else is doing and too interested and too intermingled in that way, that it has negative impacts. And that's what we're referring to when we talk about Hezekiah. So this could bring up a third component, which is very noteworthy and probably has an impact on the whole question of just how much control does an individual or a local culture have to change the policies as far as this would be concerned. And of course, each case has its own nuances, but having that as part of discussion is also very noteworthy. So that gives us three issues to consider. I think the issue of causing somebody emotional distress by looking at them when they don't want to be looked at, the issue of impacting on one's economic value by restricting their functionality because you're looking at them, and the issue of a societal norm of privacy and discretion, which requires that we conduct ourselves in a certain way, and that expresses itself as a moral value probably beyond what the individuals involved would necessarily have asked for. So, practically speaking, what does emerge is a set of rules. We have all of the dinim that our parak is going to clarify here as far as what it means in terms of building codes and things like that. But also, to some extent, it means that there is an isser involved, that there is a prohibition that is practically applicable to looking at people when they don't want to be seen. And you find this expressed in Shulchan Aruch a few places. I think I gave you to look at it, but just in case I didn't, I apologize. I think I did, but I just restate it. So one place is in Choshen Mishpat Shinayin Ches, hey, if you had a chance to see there. So there, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, Afilu Brioso, even in the context of looking at someone, Im Yesh Bo Hezek L'Chavero, if there is a impact negatively on someone else, Asulus Dakilbo, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to look at them. And therefore, like quoting our Gemara and Daf Beis Midbeis, Shulchan Aruch writes that you're not allowed to overlook your friend's field when he's doing his work. And a little bit earlier on, the Ramban Choshen Mishpat Kufnun Dalet Gimel quotes Kufnun Dal Gimel and Zion, makes references to not looking at what people are doing. And in Zion, he phrased it also la'amor b'chalon v'liros b'chatzah chavero k'dei shol yizikenu b'riyasa uvazeh isura ka'avid. You're not allowed to stand at your window and to look into your friend's courtyard to see that you're not going to hurt him with your looking at him, and that is an isser. So on one level, this is among the implications, that there is a isser that is involved, that it's wrong to do. And therefore, what does that mean? It means you shouldn't try to do it. And you should also set up your circumstances so that you're not naturally doing it. As we've seen the language in some of the sources, that you're going to have a totally open arrangement. So you're not going to be able to just avert your eyes every time something private is going on. So that puts you in constant iser. That puts you in constant problem. So therefore, in order to prevent that, so you have to create a scenario for yourself where that's not what's happening. So this idea of formulating as an iser emerges from a lot of what we've seen, but it's also important to reflect on some of the implications of that. And it's interesting, this is also something I can relate to now a little bit more, that the Sfarim writes, the Sma, I think I gave you the Sma to look at. He writes, commenting on this Ramah, on the second Ramah, that it's wrong to look at somebody at a moment that seems to be private. And he says, the way he reads the sources is that even if you're not trying, even if you're just creating the impression that you are looking at them, that is a problem. So that seems to certainly focus it more on the impact on the one being seen. Not necessarily that you're gleaning any information, but that you are impacting them either in compromising what they're doing or in making them very uncomfortable. So there's an interesting statement, which again, I can relate to a little bit more this week, that the Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein in his Sefer on Childbirth, he writes based on this Sma, it says sometimes if an ambulance shows up and everyone gathers around to see what the ambulance is for, he says this is really wrong. This is really an isser, essentially, that this is not just not so helpful, but it's also actually wrong in light of what's brought here in Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah and the Sma is an actual isser. And he writes that there's a responsibility on the tzibur when you see that happening, when you see somebody needs an ambulance and all of a sudden a crowd is gathering. So the people around should disperse the crowds, and especially the children who will be likely to come watch, that this is not right from a Hezekria perspective, and that this is a value that should be appreciated. But to focus for a second on the concept of Hezek, right? So if you see this as, let's say, the monetary focus, that I am stopping you from getting the value out of your house that you normally should expect. So how do we relate to that from a rubric of Nezikin? Or if we want to put this in the category of Nezikin, so we said the other day that it doesn't seem to perfectly fit the notion of Nezek to say Shmei Hezek doesn't seem to perfectly fit. So how does it fit or not fit? Right? So we know, for example, if I take a sledgehammer and I smash your car, so that's an act of Nezikin and I have to pay you. If I look onto your property so you don't make as much money, how is that the same or different from smashing your car with a sledgehammer? What ways is it comparable and what ways is it different?
Didn't we say that there was a, didn't we say something along the lines of like there's a difference in which in scenarios in which money is exchanged and there's something tangible in that way?
Okay, yeah, flesh that out a little bit. What do you mean?
I believe it was something mentioned in the Rush of relating our case to a scenario where you give somebody permission to break something and as such there's no mechila of any kind. Like we don't, like you can go back even if you gave somebody permission to break something. Given the fact that there was like an exchange of monetary value in there, you can always just be like, well, actually that was like dumb of me to like, to do that, like that money versus Hezekria, which in a scenario in which there's certain, there's an established understanding between the two of you that this is going to be, the norm. You can't necessarily sort of like go back on that. Cause I guess there's no, like,
I'm going to cut you off cause you're a little ahead of us. because that rush is important. We'll get to it soon, but we don't need it yet because there are aspects that even come before that rush.
Okay.
So just on the surface, what's the same, really, to narrow it down? So the two cases, I take a sledgehammer and break your car, or I look at your property and therefore you are inhibited from making as much money as you would have otherwise. What links those two? Actually, very little. So let's say I did $1,000 worth of damage to your car. And let's say you could have made $1,000 that you didn't make because I was looking at you. Okay, so in both cases, I was responsible for there being $1,000 less in your bank account. That is all actually that links the two. But there's a lot that separates the two. What's different between the two cases beyond that one connection?
One is happening right now versus happening later.
Okay. So that's definitely a part of it, right? Which is actually reflective of something else. The time delay is significant, but it's reflective also of just how absolute and how likely it is. That when I break your window, so okay, there is clear damage that we can point to. If I result in your making less money this season because I've been looking in your lawn, looking in your backyard, so yeah, maybe that's what we're assuming. It might happen. And if it does happen, it's not necessarily so undeniable. So it's definitely much less absolute. And in general, we have a principle in Nezikin that grama benezikin is putter. So if I cause you to lose money indirectly, if I cause you to lose property value indirectly, I am normally exempt. That's a very surface statement. There are many caveats to that, but on the surface, normally putter, a Beis Din cannot compel me to pay if the damage I did to you was causational. So to that extent, that's a big difference. And indeed, that plays out because we normally don't find that you are charged for hezekriya. So those two aspects are indeed both pretty different. So you might say, how does this fit into the whole hezek model? It's a grumma, right? I'm not directly causing you to lose money. Not directly imposing a monetary loss. I'm only indirectly leading to you making less money. And that itself, making less money rather than losing money, it's already a grama. And that shouldn't be in the category of Nezikin. And in fact, the question answers itself to a certain extent, because indeed, yes, that's true, that you don't normally have the right to collect because of that factor. So that might not be a question. It might actually be an explanation that this is, yes, indeed, Nezikin at a remove. And Nezikin at a remove, that's indeed the proper category that there isn't actually a Teshlumin. But what's important, very important to emphasize, is that when it comes to Grama B'Nezikin, it's certainly usser to do. You're not allowed to intentionally inflict damage on somebody, even if it would be indirect. So it could be actually the category is very appropriate. Right? It could actually be that fits very well, that this is somewhat of a grumma benezikin. It's not a nezikin in the direct sense, but it's a grumma. And indeed, it creates an isser, and therefore it also can impact how I lechadchila set up my life. But indeed, on the surface, it's not something that is actionable in Beis Din. Now, the truth is, even that is not absolute. And that is something we'll have to, God willing, pick up with tomorrow. But until now, everybody good? Everything makes sense? So just a very quickly one-sentence recap. So we said that basically we have three models of what the damage of hezek riya is, either the psychic pain of my spying on you, or the emotional, the economical impact of you are not being able to use your property as you expect to, or to make the money that you would expect to make, or also the cultural value, which is not even up to you, Matovu Alech Yaakov, which tells us we should insist on our confidentiality. And this is all going to impact the practice. We find that the Zrama and others write, and the Sma write, that there is an Isser involved, which is also based on our Gemara on Beis Mubeis, which says as much as well. And that has a lot of implications for incidences that could come up that people don't necessarily perceive in this way. And then we started to talk about the question of, going back to the economic impact, how does that fit the Nazikan model, being that the Nazikan model is itself normally involving direct demonstrable damage and repayment, and neither of those are on the surface here. And maybe that itself is the explanation of its own question. And God willing, we will continue from that point specifically tomorrow. So I wish everyone a day of good health and happiness. And as Hashem, I look forward to continuing this and seeing you tomorrow. Have a great day.
Thank you. Man, thank you.